Guten Tag, Gehrim, was hört sich, was machst du? Kinder, ich bin alte Leute, ich will euch alle suchen, als das ist Ruhren, Leif Rickman. And ich bin, why don't we do this in English to make it easier for everybody? Hi, this is Alan Lewis Rickman, and I'm here on Dave's Gone By on UNC Radio. And I'm going to be interviewed by Saul Solomon.
Oh, shalom, shalom, my friends, shalom, my enemies. This is your old pal, Rabbi Saul Solomon, founder and spiritual leader of Temple Sons of Bitches in Great Neck, New York. And I am thrilled and delighted to be talking about two things simultaneously today, the theater and Yiddish, because there's going to be a Yiddish play, something that hasn't been done since like 1910, and they're doing it this coming Monday, February 6th, at YIVO, and it's an adaptation, a translation of a show called Money, Love, and Shame, of which only the third I'm really cognizant about. So we're going to be talking with Alan Lewis Rickman. He's an actor, a comedian, and, if I dare say, a Yiddishist. And he is with us on the telephone right now. Shalom, Alan Lewis Rickman!
Rabbi, if you don't mind, I just want to correct a misapprehension. The show is not in Yiddish. The show was originally in Yiddish. It was written in Yiddish and was done all over the world in Yiddish about a century ago. But what we're doing next week at YIVO is in English. That's the translation. I translated it from Yiddish into English.
Now, how many years have you known Yiddish? How did you come to be fluent in what people, many people would call a dead language?
Many people call it dead language. Many people are, let's say, a little bit off the mark. Bishop Singer said it better than anybody. He said that Yiddish has been called a dying language, but between dying and dead is a very long time. There are various estimates of how many people in the world speak Yiddish today, but the most common one is about 1 million. And the language 1 million people speak isn't exactly dead.
Well, wasn't it the Chassids who brought it back? Because they use it in their regular lingo when they're not doing Hebrew.
No, they didn't bring it back, and it hasn't been brought back. They've been using it steadily. They haven't done anything to expand the use of the language or anything. Chassidim speak Yiddish among themselves. Actually, not all Chassidim even at that. Among the Lubavitchers, which are the ones who do outreach and make new Chassidim in the non-biblical way, the younger Lubavitchers don't even speak Yiddish. It's the Satmar and the Gael and the Bava and the, those people. But they haven't brought it because they don't, like I said, they don't do anything for Yiddish. What is new-ish...
Newish and Jewish, yes, is...
Well, there's the Yiddishist world, which has been going on for quite a while and is doing very well. And if anybody can claim to have brought back Yiddish, it's definitely the Yiddishists, who are mostly secular people.
And that would be you among them.
I wouldn't call myself necessarily a secular person. I'm a little of a lot of different things, but I'm sort of a Yiddishist, too.
Now, wait. So you're not Orthodox. What is your Jewish background, then?
Modern Orthodox.
Oh, I did not know that. So you celebrate the Shabbos and all that?
Yes, sometimes we have to make certain compromises for work reasons, but we do the best we can.
Now, here's the deal. So, being modern Orthodox, Alan Lewis...
I've also been on Broadway and done movies and television and all of that.
So, what do you do on Friday night when you have a show, or Saturday afternoon matinee?
What I do is I walk to the show. I walk to the theater. I live in Midtown.
Right.
So I've done Broadway and off-Broadway shows where I would do a show on Friday night or Saturday afternoon, and I would walk. That's not always possible, but you do the best you can.
But you wouldn't consider being on stage in a show working, quote-unquote.
Well, that's, if you know anything about Judaism...
I know nothing about Judaism, yes.
Working is not what you're not supposed to do on Shabbos. A rabbi works on Shabbos. Cantor works on Shabbos. That's a very common misnomer. It's work is the English translation of the word malacha, which is referring specifically to 39 types of things that we used in building the tabernacle. Those 39 things are the things you don't do. So you don't plant, you don't sow, you don't write, you don't start a fire, etc., etc., etc. A rabbi works.
No, that's a good
point. What do you think they pay him for?
Now, but wait a minute. Let's get Talmudic here.
Right?
Hold on. Let's say you're in a show where you have to be sitting at a desk and writing something in a scene. Now, what do you do?
You do it with an empty pen or a broken pencil.
Yeah. Oh, I love the way logic has to twist itself into knots.
It's not twisting itself into knots because it's, Judaism is a very legalistic religion. It's like people who have a hostility towards orthodoxy often think, what are you doing sitting there on Friday night with the electric light on? Well, it's not that you're not just supposed to sit in the darkness. it's that you're not supposed to turn the light on. So if you put on a time clock that turns it on and off, that's fine. What are you, why not sit in the cold and eat cold food and wear dirty clothes? That's not what it's about.
That's right.
The people that are twisting themselves into paroxysms are the hostile people, not the people who practice it.
I agree. I mean, look, if I've got a ham sandwich in the fridge, I'm not going to let it go stale on Shabbos. I'm going to finish that thing up.
I had an old friend of mine. You do what's right for you, and period, and end of story. I had an old friend of mine years ago who used to eat ham on matzah on Passover.
Oh, God.
I wouldn't call him Orthodox, by the way, but it was, you know, but I would certainly call him a character. Anyhow.
But he didn't put cheese on it. That would have broken the back of it. Not to mention broken the matzah. But I did interrupt the beginning of this story of how you first learned Yiddish and became not a Yiddishist, but a modern Orthodox.
I grew up speaking Yiddish, but I grew up hearing Yiddish. It was the first language for both my parents. My father was a survivor, and my mother was American-born to European parents. And both of them, obviously for my father, but for my mother as well, it was their first language. And they would speak it a lot in the house, and they wouldn't speak it for secrets or this and that. They just would fall into it. And I liked it. I'd say, what do you say? How do you say this? Or what does that mean? Yada, yada. And little by little, I picked it up and started speaking it. I don't know when I actually started, but that was it. I think part of the reason I got interested is because I went to yeshiva. I went to a typical modern Orthodox yeshiva when I was a kid. And a typical modern Orthodox yeshiva then and now has no Yiddish whatsoever. All they have is Hebrew, and forgive me, but Hebrew is goddamn boring.
Oh, my God. Oh, no, I do not forgive you.
Hebrew's boring. Hebrew is for Torah. Hebrew is for prayers. But as a conversational language, Hebrew is a very much a weak sister compared to Yiddish.
Because there's no curses. It's a Bible language. You're not allowed to curse in it.
The curses in Hebrew are vulgarisms taken from Arabic.
Ooh.
And the curses in Yiddish are terrible things that should happen to you, usually involving obscure diseases.
Right.
Which language would you rather speak?
The one where you can grow like an onion with a head and a...
For example.
Yes, exam. So...
Actually, the only Yiddish I learned in 12 years of yeshiva was one curse that our 10th grade Gemara Rebbe taught us. Sollst leben pink wie ein Hängleiche, hungern bei Tag und brennen bei Nacht, which means, may you live like a chandelier, hang all day and burn all night.
Ooh, that's good.
One of my favorites. That and sollst stinken vom Kopf, may you give off bad odors from your head. I think those are my two favorite Yiddish curses.
I never heard that. May you give off bad odors from your head. That's marvelous.
Oh, a friend of mine who I knew from Yiddish theater, actually, told me his grandmother's pet Yiddish curse, which is also "I nehme na trolley car and always cocking transfers." May you consume a trolley car and defecate transfers.
I'm sorry, that's me laughing in the back. Well, now, who's that? When you say I have a friend in the Yiddish theater, who the hell's in the Yiddish theater? You've got Steve Sterner, Eleanor Risa. Is there anybody else?
Steve is going to be working on our show next Monday.
Is he real? Oh, my gosh, I remember him from...
This is we'll talk about that, but this is a melodrama, and melodrama, you know, the word comes from melody. Melodrama was drama with music underneath, and Steve, aside from being a wonderful actor with a lovely resume and has done a million things, Steve is also a terrific accompanist, a terrific pianist. He is the house pianist at Film Forum in New York City, where he plays the accompaniment for all the silent movies there. And he's also worked as a silent film accompanist at the Brooklyn Academy of Music and the Museum of Modern Art and a bunch of other places, yada, yada. So Steve is playing an original score underneath the show next Monday.
And he composed it?
It's his. He always does his own. So he always composes his own scores.
Oh, that's marvelous, marvelous. Oh, so it's not just a play, ladies and gentlemen, and not just a play in English, but it's a play with music under it. So there's always something.
Nobody hates English so much that they won't come because of it.
Oh no, of course not. But still, so many questions. Not to mention, I certainly always wished I had a 6-inch pianist. But you know. thank you. Perfect.
That joke is older than the play I'm doing.
Well, your play was from 1910, so how did you just...
1910, yes. I think that joke is from 10.
How did you uncover, though? What made you go to this as opposed to some of the more well-known plays, like the one, the God of Vengeance, and things like that?
Well, I'm glad you asked me that, because the answer's really boring. God of Vengeance is a terrific play. God of Vengeance is really a first-rate drama. And this is a steaming turd. There's a guy in Yiddish theater, I'm not going to mention names at the moment, but there's a guy in Yiddish theater who I gave him this play to read years ago, and as a suggestion for something, you know, we ought to do a full production of. And he read it, and he said he thought it was mediocre. And I thought, that's it. This guy is an utter moron. Anybody who thinks this thing is mediocre should not be allowed inside a theater, never mind to work in theater. This play is not mediocre. This is the most vile, rancid piece of God only knows what. This is a play to inspire pogroms.
I see you haven't seen my play, but okay, yeah, all right. Second only to Shalom Dammit, but all right, yes.
That's what it's an absolutely atrocious play. How I first came across it is not interesting at all, and I'll tell you. My friend Shane Baker passed me along a copy of a boiled down version of it that Minna Byrne used to do somewhere.
Oh, Minna Byrne! But we should explain. She was this woman who kept doing Yiddish theater into her 90s.
What 90s? 90s was her teen years. Minna started in vaudeville with Noah. I mean, Minna was...
And let me tell you, I saw, you know, at the Folks Meeting and other plays, I saw her do these plays. And years would pass in between every sentence that she spoke.
Well, she had to take long breaks to look out at the audience and mug. She was absolutely shameless. She was a lovely person, and I knew Minna quite well.
Actually, she wasn't. If you'll forgive me, though, my mistake. She was all right. It was Zipporah Spiceman
I did my first ever professional theater show with Zipporah, and not long ago I saw a video, and of course I hadn't seen anything Zipporah did in ages and ages. She did one thing, and she did it incredibly well. She always played these snarky Jewish wives who would basically stand on the side of the stage and say vicious, hateful things about every character in the play.
Right.
And she was hilarious at it.
She was. But I also remember at one point, it was just like, you know, she'd say something, and then, you know, you check your watch, you have a beverage, you use the men's room, you go around the block maybe for some cheese sticks.
I thought she had great timing, but
okay.
You might have seen her on an off day or waiting when she was waiting for laughs that didn't come.
But, okay, fair enough. I'm sorry again to interrupt. So you came across this stinking
shisa
of a play.
Boiled-down version that was really... it was very incomplete and very unsatisfying, and it was good. But there was something about it that intrigued me, and so I went and tracked it down in the original Yiddish, and I read it, and it basically stunk up my entire apartment for a month and a half.
So it's even worse than the original Yiddish. That's great. Okay.
And that was it, and that developed my interest in this play. And I've always been interested in melodrama, particularly. One thing I directed years and years ago. Was I did a musical version of The Drunkard with a score by the late John Gluck, who is best known as the guy who wrote It's My Party and I'll Cry If I Want To.
Oh.
And we did that, and it ran for a few months at the Duplex in 89, 90. And it was really a lot of fun. And that was around the time I started getting into melodrama. Melodrama is just fun stuff.
But if people are coming to see this show on Monday at YIVO, should they expect... I mean, it's a melodrama. Should they expect to laugh and laugh at it or not?
Please God, yes.
Oh, okay, yeah.
You hit the nail right on the head. The this part of what's so funny about it is we do this in an absolute raw melodramatic style, as it was done in 1910. Maybe exaggerated very slightly, but very, very slightly. And what where the real humor really comes from is look at this and think people took this seriously once.
Oh.
We do, my wife Yelena and Steve Sterner and I do a show that we tour with called The Essence of Yiddish Theater Dim Sum. We just did that in Romania about 6 weeks ago, and it's a review about the history of Yiddish theater. And there's a section in there where we do something about melodrama, and we do a song that you might even know. It's a very well-known Yiddish song called Papirossen. You know the song Papirossen?
Paper matches, was that the thing, or...
Yeah, matches.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, the cigarette, well, it's like a little match girl. Papirossen means cigarettes, but it's like a little match girl type story, and what do you call it? The song, it's this hideously sentimental thing that people all have these kind of warm, nostalgic feelings about, and Akalte Nacht, Regendicke Finster, mit dem Steid, Ingele Betrachtig, etc., etc. And it's a story about this... the lyric is about this young boy selling cigarettes and matches and standing out in the rain and da-da-da. And it's supposed to be, heart-tugging. And people who first heard this when they're kids still have these feelings about it. Well, when we do it, Yelena plays the piano, Steve sings it in Yiddish, and I translate it line by line into Yiddish not just the first verse, which is what most people will know, but all three verses. And by the end of the third verse, people are falling on the floor in hysterics, just at how absolutely, preposterously, absurdly manipulative
is
that people once took this seriously.
Don't tell that to Avi Hoffman.
The answer to your question is yes, I think they'll laugh. We did the show, the same show a couple of years ago at for the Target Margin company in a small production, and people were absolutely hysterics at it.
Oh, and by the way, Dubit Herskovitz is a friend of the neighborhood. He's been on this radio program. And What? Sorry.
Lovely guy.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And so are you, Alan Lewis Rickman. I have so many questions for this actor, whom, by the way, the voice might be familiar to him, to all of you listening, because he's been in Boardwalk Empire, and he had a role in a couple of Coen Brothers projects, including A Serious Man. How did you get involved with the Coens?
The Serious Man was the first thing I did for the Coen Brothers. I had an audition, myself and my wife, Elena Schmulenson, who is also, if you remember Serious Man, if you remember the prologue that's in Yiddish, it's about a husband and wife arguing whether or not an old man, Fibish Finkel, is a divic. And the end of the scene, you know, the wife puts an ice pick in his chest. Well, the wife is my wife, Elena Schmulenson, who right now is a recurring role on Orange is the New Black. Anyhow, so we got an audition for it. It's kind of a story. Yelena auditioned first, and I was out of town. And at her initial audition, I couldn't make it the initial audition. I was doing a play in California. So I recorded it, and she brought it in and dropped it off for them. Well, when she did her callback, the first audition was for the casting director. The callback was for the Coen brothers. They were basically laughing at commas. Anything she did, she inhaled, they laughed. She exhaled, they laughed. And then I auditioned for them when I got back to New York a couple of weeks later. I got no reaction whatsoever. It was, you know, it was Tolstoy's funeral when I went into the room. But we wound up both getting cast in it. So I figured it's very obvious. They loved her and figured, well, as long as we're taking her, we might as well take the schmuck husband along with her.
There you go. That happens with me and my wife, let me tell you. But they remembered you even further because you were on Broadway in the one-act plays of Relatively Speaking, with plays by...
That's right, Ethan Coen was behind that, and I knew Ethan originally from Serious Man.
Well, did you work...
He did one of those one-acts that was one by Ethan Coen, one by Elaine May, one by Woody Allen.
Right. Did you work with the other two directors? I mean, did you have any interaction with Woody Allen?
I met him briefly a couple of times. The way the show worked... Some people were in one of the one acts, some people were in two, nobody was in three, and some people understudied some of them. So I was in two of the three. I was in Ethan's and I was in Elaine's, and I understudied Woody's. But I met him in passing a handful of times. I did something for John Turturro that he was in, and I met him one or two other times, but
You never really interacted. You was just like, hello, nice to see you.
Exactly. That's the limit of my...
What about Elaine May, though?
Elaine, I did her play.
I know. So any stories, any anecdotes? What was she like?
Not about Elaine. I did a small part in that play. My main thing was the Ethan thing. And I had some interaction with Elaine, but not a tremendous amount.
Okay. Because what I love to hear is stories about the people, that the celebrities.
I'll tell you, that was a wonderful experience. And we just had just lovely people top to bottom. It was just a great, great experience. John Turturro directed, and I've worked with John twice since then on other projects. And the thing I did for Ethan there was just such fun. It was...
It was kind of David Mamet-like, the play, that one, as I recall.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's a fair adjective. It's this guy who was in an asylum and he's being because it's in a criminal asylum, and he has four sessions with the head shrinker, and then we see the last scene of the play is we see his parents from just around the time that he was born. And the parents, you could see exactly why the guy wound up in a nut house. And the parents were me and Kathy Borowitz, who was a wonderful actress and who was John Turturro's wife. And basically, we played a cranky Jewish couple, cranky middle-aged Jewish couple from the outer boroughs, where the husband was absolutely obsessed with Adolf Hitler.
Yes, which is basically all Jewish husbands.
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly. So it was, and I got to do this right after night for Bob the Set. It was a delight. We had wonderful people. Marlo Thomas was in it. I worked with Marlo in that, and Markman Baker is a lovely guy, and Steve Gutenberg, just really nice people, top to bottom. I hate to tell you, if you're looking for kind of nasty
no.
people, there is only one person that I ever, that I either met or worked with, that is, it was a well-established person, that I would have anything negative to say about, and that was that anti-Semite prick who was running around with my name.
Oh, my God. I was going to ask you. Now I'm going to explain to the listeners that last year, an actor named Alan Rickman, you all know him, he's very dead now. He dropped dead. He was in the Harry Potter movies. He was Snape. And he directed, and this is why I wanted to get into it with you, he directed an off-Broadway show called My Name is Rachel Corrie.
That's right.
Which made a martyr of this stupid Jewish girl who stands in front of a tank. The people in the tank say, you know, get away from the tank or we're going to run you over. She says, no, let's give Israel to the Palestinians. They're saying, get away from the tank, we're going to run you over. She's like, no, I'm holding my sign, and smush. And they make a play about this.
I don't think she was Jewish, by the way, Rachel Corrie, a real person. I think she was Protestant.
Oh, I do. Oh, I
guess but, I no, but, but the yeah. reason my namesake, he also wrote this play, and the reason he wrote the play like that was he had a very good reason.
What?
He's an anti-Semite. That's the reason. So.
No, wait. Do you have proof of it? Since we live in an era of fake facts, what is your proof that he was an anti-Semite?
He wrote that play. Do you need more than that?
Well, did you see the play? I certainly did not. I chose not to.
I met him before that. I met him 20 years ago, and that was enough. I avoided any contact with anything he had ever had anything to do with after that. I met him. I was with my girlfriend at the time. This is in the early 90s, and I ran into him in the lobby of the National Theatre in London. And we were going to see a show, and we happened to be talking about him. And there he was, standing about 6 feet away from us. And I went over and introduced myself, and I knew from different sources that he had multiple people told me this, that he had a very bad reputation in British theatre circles as being just an absolute putz. And I went over and introduced myself to him, and much to my surprise, he was an absolute putz.
What? So what did he say to you?
I don't know. That he was a jerk. Let's talk about something more entertaining.
No, okay. But, no, actually, because I want to bring him up
but
also.
I've worked with, you know, Liev Schreiber and John and Steve Buscemi and.
We can talk about them, but I.
Carlo and all those people.
I have a fun question, though.
Johnston, every one of these people is an absolute delight.
But what I want to know is, have you, since your name, it's spelled a little differently, but since your names were essentially the same, did you ever get work or get a residual check or something like that was meant for the other Rickman and that helped you?
No. I think I used to get mail. There was a demented fat woman in New Jersey that was obsessed with him some years back and used to write to me incessantly. She finally stopped.
Oh, my God.
But she was obviously out of her mind. She never.
Wait. How did you know she was fat?
She sent me pictures.
Oh, God. Oh,
and,
God.
I mean, nothing is... I'm overweight myself. I'm not going to knock her for that. But she was sending me pictures. Here's me standing in front of my car. And there's a picture of a car with nobody in front of it. and she said presents like... I mean, it's almost cruel to laugh at it, but she would send presents like a package of red Bic pens and a, you know, those things you put in the back of darts that you know, the plastic things sort of like feathers to make darts fly straight. She sent me a package of those as a present. She was clearly out of her mind.
You should have pointed her to the real Alan Rickman.
And she was obsessed with, well, I'm the real Alan Rickman.
I was sorry. No, you're right.
But she was clearly obsessed with him, and I was the one getting all the terrifying mail.
Oh, my God. Yeah, see, you should have first pointed her to Walmart where she could buy a gun, and then send her to the real Alan Rickman, except you didn't have to, because God took him first, which is nice.
Well, that was about 20 years ago.
Wow.
Getting that stuff from her, so God knows where she is now.
Now, you were rattling off people that you loved working with. You were in a movie called The Cobbler just a year or two ago.
Oh, sure.
With Adam Sandler. Any stories about him? Good stories.
No, my scene was in The Cobbler was similar to my scene in Serious Man. It was self-contained. It was a prologue.
Oh, okay.
That was not so. I didn't meet Sandler, and I didn't meet Dustin Hoffman.
Well, what about Steve Buscemi, whom everybody loves?
The guy who directed The Cobbler, which didn't do all that well, reviews-wise or business-wise, went on and got the best director Oscar for the very next movie he made. So I should have waited one more.
One more? I mean, that happens. What can I tell you?
Yeah, Steve Buscemi is a doll. Steve Buscemi is just a lovely guy. I wish I had something entertaining or whatever, but he's just a class act, just a mental guy.
Now,
And there's a, and Kristen Johnston was like, you know Kristen from Third Rock.
Third Rock, yes.
Yeah. So, Chris, we were like siblings. She was just, I had a blast with Kristen. And so on and so on. Liev Schreiber is the most lovely, unpretentious, straightforward guy. Pacino is a terrific person.
Wait, where did you act with Pacino?
He did a movie for Barry Levinson called You Don't Know Jack, the one about Kevorkian. That's with him and John Goodman and Susan Sarandon and Brenda Vaccaro, and I'm in that. I'm in several scenes in that, and two of them are with Pacino, and he's a very interesting guy. But the thing I was particularly impressed with positively about Pacino is you'd think somebody on his level would be sort of standoffish or something. Well, the first scene I shot with Pacino was a scene with a lot of production. It was an outdoor scene and outside a bungalow where Kevorkian had just done an assisted suicide, and there's all these cop cars there and a bunch of extras and this and that. There's a lot, big crowd there. So as always with a movie, they take the shot one way, then they turn the lights around and shoot the same thing from a different direction, and turning the lights around takes ages, so there's downtime. So Pacino could have gone back to his trailer, whatever, and he didn't. And he would stand outside, and all these extras and people were coming up to him and yada yada, and he was just nice as can be.
Oh, I'd love to see. Everybody thinks that I'm looking for dirt on act. I just want cute stories, nice stories.
And John Goodman was even nicer, if possible. Lovely guy.
John Goodman. I'm so happy to hear these things. Now, you've said
The only one who was a mumser was the guy with my name.
Yeah, with your name. Well, let's also, do you have, in some level, slandered a certain author? So, do you know any other works by Isaac Zolotarewski, the guy who wrote...
I've read a number of plays by Zolotarewski. This is his best play, and by the I mean this is his worst play. I've read a number of his other plays, and they're all typical rancid melodramas of the period. This one's just the most fun, and it's the best built.
Oh, okay.
This is a four-act play that plays in 85 minutes.
Ooh! Wait. Did it originally, or when you got a hold of it, it's now 85 minutes?
No, it's. I have no idea what the playing time would have been in 1910, but we just did. You know, I translated what was on the page. I'll be honest to say, I didn't try to make it look less stupid, but I just translated what was on the page, and we did it. We played it in a nice clip, like melodrama is supposed to be played, and that's it, 85 minutes.
Oh, my God. Now...
loaded with incident. It's just one ridiculous incident and preposterous character after another.
By the way, I have not written this down, and shame on me, but where is YIVO?
YIVO is on West 16th Street. It's 15 West 16th Street, which is between 5th and 6th, north side of the street, middle of the block. And YIVO, which is the Yiddish Institute, shares its building with the Safra Foundation, which is the Sephardic... Institute, and there's the German Jewish organization that also, the Leo Beck Institute and the Yeshiva University Museum is there. It's a building that's shared by about four different Jewish cultural organizations. A gorgeous place with a lovely auditorium, which is where we're going to be doing this.
Can I ask, is this a benefit of some sort? I mean, who's producing and what's, what was the impetus for all this?
It's not a benefit. Well, YIVO has the largest archive in the world of Yiddish materials, of original Yiddish materials. And so I've been talking to some of the folks there about doing something like this for a while, and they particularly liked this idea because it's, although the script is not, it's actually not that difficult to find. It's online, the original Yiddish script, if you want to find it. They also have there multiple original handwritten Yiddish manuscripts from various productions and various versions of it. So basically, although it's really just an entertainment, we're just doing this, it's just for fun that we're doing this. This ain't homework. At the same time, it does show off the sort of thing that they have, that YIVO collects.
Oh, sure. No, I mean, it's a whole myriad. If all Yiddish plays were one kind of thing, we wouldn't be all that interested in them 80 years later, you know, of course.
Well said. The I do have to say that this show is technically a reading, which means we're not going to be doing sets and costumes and props and that kind of stuff. But it's also going to be basically off-book. So if you've ever seen any of the Broadway Encores series that are done at City Center every year, where you see basically it's a full show, but they still are holding scripts in their hands, that's the style that we're doing it in.
Now, let me ask you, Alan Lewis Rickman. Well, first of all, I heard another voice.
Which is why we're able to charge so little.
Oh, well, absolutely. We got to eat, you know?
No, but that's why the price is so little, because...
Why, how much is it?
It's $10 for members.
Oh, my, that's nothing. That's
non-members,
yes. Everybody should go see this play, Money, Love, and Shame Adapted, translated and directed and co-starring...
Yes.
Alan Lewis Rickman. It's this Monday night, February 6th. Now, I heard another voice by... Is that your lovely wife, Yelena Shmulinson?
My lovely wife, Yelena Shmulinson. By the way, but just before we leave, the all-important plug, just go to YIVO.org and you'll find the tickets and everything else on the website there.
YIVO, Y-I-V-O, YIVO.org. Or how did you meet your lovely wife? Was it doing theater?
Theater.
Oh!
Interestingly enough, yeah, we were both working on a show, which Minna was in. You might even have seen it. It was a show called... Bloody Hell. It was called
Bloody Hell. Well, that's quite a...
Oh, man. Eva Butelkeit is gunisch kameichel. It's no joy to be senile, believe you me. Especially, I'm not old enough for it yet. Anyhow, this play is called A Klezmer's Tale in English, and the original Yiddish play is called A Klezmer's Tale.
I don't recall. How long ago was that?
That was in 1999.
Oh, so you've been together, Mazel Tov, almost 20 years at this point.
Yeah.
How is it being married to another actor? Does that make it life easier because you know the field? Or sometimes it's like, well, I'm in Belgium on Tuesday and in Russia on Thursday.
It's an endless delight. Next question.
She's in the room. Okay, I hear you.
Oh, it's fine. Yeah, sometimes I'm here. I'm in one place, and she's in another place. That does happen. But lately, like, we've been working together a fair amount, specifically on Yiddish projects, because as you know by now, we both do quite a lot of stuff in English. But we've done a fair amount of stuff in Yiddish together, and we were just in Romania. Doing the show together.
Oh, Romania. Yes.
They're only one, not multiple.
Yes,
the Romania from the song, not quite. Although, like they say in the song, Nishta Heindigame, Romania, no, the Amulige Romania. Well, we weren't in the Amulige Romania, the Romania of legend. We were in the Heindige Romania, the Romania of today.
Wow. Let me ask you a question. Let me, involving something non-Jewish, and shame on you. Here we go. You co-wrote a musical called, and I don't even want to say this word, but I'm going to, Christmas at the Small Empire Music Hall. What the hell are you doing writing a Christmas show?
I have an excellent Jewish reason for that.
Oh, well, money, yeah, what?
It pays me, yes, now you're ahead of me, there you go. That was a very sweet show, and I think that'll probably have a life.
Well, where did you do it? What was it?
I was hired to do that in there's a lovely theater in Hackettstown called the Centenary Stage Company, where I've worked as an actor a number of times, and we did the Essence of Yiddish Theater Dim Sum there actually about 2 years ago.
Oh, good. Okay, so at least you're doing both sides of the coin there.
I'm not writing anti-Semitic plays like the other guy with my name.
Thank God for that. Let me ask, did you ever do actual real stand-up comedy?
I kind of dipped my toe in the water many years ago and just said, you know something, this is too goddamn hard.
Mm.
It's a very lonely thing to do. I like working with people. That's really the truth behind that. Because when you're doing stand-up, you go out and work your material, and then you go home and rework your material, and then go out and do your material, and then you go home and rework your material. And it's really, there's something essentially antisocial about it. And I like working with people.
And you get to do, what's lovely is, because both you and your wife work constantly, whether it's in America, you're in Romania, she's got a gig on Orange is the New Black, you are able to make a life and career in entertainment, theater as well as TV and movies as well, and support yourself. Yeah, sorry? What?
Then we are starving to death.
Oh, there you go. Well, if you do a Holocaust play, boom, you're ready.
Well, actually, I was a technical advisor. I was credited as a technical advisor on, what the hell was the movie that won the Best Picture Oscar? The Best Foreign Film Oscar.
What?
A Holocaust movie. Son of Saul.
Wait, was Schindler's List?
No, Son of Saul.
Son of Saul.
Son of Saul, the Hungarian Holocaust movie from last year that I believe won the Best Foreign Film Oscar.
Oh, you were what? So how do you technically advise on that?
The
Jews aren't going to the beach there. They're actually going into the oven. Well, I mean, what do you tell them?
They sent me the script, and I had an hour with them on Skype, and we discussed all a bunch of details in the script. They were potentially interested in me doing their translation for them, doing the Yiddish dialogue.
Oh.
But they wound up getting a guy from Israel, a very good guy, a very talented guy, to do it, because the thing is, he could do double duty because he was thin enough to play an inmate. Well, which I couldn't do.
And by the way, I credit myself for not making a duty joke there. So, at least patting myself on the back for not going that low.
Don't pat yourself on the back too hard for that.
Really?
If that is as far as you can get being something to be proud of.
That really is as far as I can get having something to be proud of, let me tell you.
Welcome to you.
No, you know what? No, because I am very proud to have you, Alan Lewis Rickman, on this radio program. You've been hilarious.
Just speaks to your very low standards.
So, last question for you, as we remind people that this Monday on West 16th Street at YIVO, they're doing Money, Love, and Shame, an English translation of a 1910 Yiddish play that is going to be hysterically funny melodrama, and YIVO.org for more information about that. What else are you working on? What are your upcoming projects, Alan Lewis Rickman?
A couple of things. One of the things I'm doing, it's not actually a theatrical project directly, but I'm the vice president of the Hebrew Actors Foundation, and we're in the process of working on restoring our building. The Hebrew Actors Union, which had a building, had its own building on East 7th Street, the union is no longer, and that was the Yiddish Actors Union, and we are the follow-up organization to it, and we're turning the building into a performance space. So that's one of the things I'm working on. Also preparing something for Romania, again, because we were in the, as I mentioned before, we were in Romania. We were there for the first international Yiddish theater festival in Bucharest, and it was very successful, and it went terrifically for us there. And we've been immediately asked to come back, and they're doing a second festival, so preparing stuff for that, and putting together stuff for a tour of our show, The Essence, Yiddish Theater Dim Sum, which, by the way, you can look at the website for that. Go to YiddishEssence.org, and it has a couple of clips from the show, and that's a fun show. That's the three of us. That's me, Elena, and Steve Sterner, and it's designed to be something very small that we tour around with very easily, so that's what we do with it.
YiddishEssence.org. Well, you...
.com, I'm sorry. My mistake. Yiddish.
Oh, I'm sorry, .com, sorry. But Alan Lewis Rickman, you bring the YiddishEssence.com to us here in the neighborhood, and we have been delighted and thrilled to talk to you. We hope to invite you back even again in a while, just to tell us more of your endeavors, just because you're so funny and so full of Yiddishkeit and delight, and so full of hatred for the original Alan Rickman. So
what, the original? I was here first, at least in America.
That's right. Okay, you are the original.
Older than me, that I'm the Semit, but I was here first.
Well, we are glad you've been here with us in the neighborhood. Much success, much continued joy in what you do, in the Yiddishkeit and everything else, and shalom to you.
Thank you very much. No, I'm simple.